Welcome to the 33rd episode of the Board Game OK podcast, a podcast about board games and the hobby of board gaming, recorded in the sunny and springy windy Helsinki, Finland. I'm your host, Luis, and with me is my co-host, Jonas.
Vappu terve, is it? Except it's not going to be Vappu when the episode comes out. Mm-hmm. But tomorrow there's going to be Vappu, Labor Day in, or May Day in Finland.
The day past tomorrow. So tomorrow is like
May Day Eve.
May Day Eve. Yeah.
So a lot of festivities in Helsinki. It's a big party in Helsinki every time Vappu comes around.
Yeah, so exciting times ahead. But when this episode airs, it's going to be a little bit past.
I'm then already looking for the next year's Vappu when this episode comes up.
In this episode, we'll discuss board game evening group events, also known as board game meetups.
The good. What is that? Evening?
Board game evening group events.
Aha, also known as meetups.
Also known as board game meetups. So evening, I think like I wanted to give a generic name because I don't know if meetup is just like the, you know, the brand of this website where this type of events originated.
Yeah, meetup.com. Like, yeah, that's a good question because when I first started going to meetups, meetups.com already existed. So I don't know what was the world
before.
Like before meetup.com. Did people use the word meetup?
Yeah, maybe it was just meet up.
Do you want to meet up?
Yeah, like let's go to this board game meet up.
Yes. And if you had, and you know, developer meetups, that's where I first started use meetups, meetup.com. So was it so that before that it was called developer evening gathering? So what did you say?
Yeah, developing evening group event.
Yeah.
Or evening gathering. So board game evening group events is what I generically named it. But if I had thought about it, maybe we'll have named it board game group gathering. But anyway, board game meetups, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We will also review two games before that, Age of Rails South Africa and Moon Colony Bloodbath. So Jonas, do you want to start us with the review of Age of Rails South Africa?
No, because I want to start with the review of Age of Rail South Africa.
Oh, is it rail?
Yeah.
Damn it. Okay. Oh my God, such a flounder from my part adding that S in the game that it should be called Age of Rail, which makes no sense. There's multiple rails. There's not just one rail.
Yeah, it's a rail to substance that is being laid out.
No.
You know, Age of Milk. You wouldn't say Age of Milks. So Age of Rail, not Age of Rails.
Oh, no.
You know what? Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
I had to also double check whether it's Age of Rails or Age of Rail. I thought it was Age of Rails.
Okay.
But it is, in fact, Age of Rail South Africa. Now, let's get to the less important parts about the game. So now that we've discussed the most critical thing. Okay. This is a game released all the way back in 2011. It now has a new, very stylish edition by Capstone Games. If you are familiar with the Capstone Games Iron Rails series, sorry, Iron Rail series, not Iron Rails series. This is the fourth title in the series. All of the Iron Rail series games are re-implementations or reprints of older Cube Rails games, which means all of the games will have something to do with stocks and trains. Luis, we have played Age of Rail South Africa twice together. I have played it one more time without you. Before I ask you what do you think about Age of Rail, I actually want to try to predict your takes. Are you ready for my predictions?
All right.
I'm expecting you to give Age of Rail South Africa 2 stars. I'm expecting you to say that there is a massive runaway leader problem in the game. And I'm expecting you to say that the game is frustrating. How many did I get right out of these 3 predictions?
I think you got all of them right.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, it's not only frustrating at the start. I think it's a little bit annoying that towards the end of the game, you start just counting. Who am I competing against? And who am I really trying to take something out of? But maybe you should explain a bit of the mechanics in order for this to make sense.
Well, I can explain the basic mechanisms.
For those who don't know, Age of Rail.
Yeah. If you have played Chicago Express, if you have played Irish Gauge, Berrien Gauge, Ride the Rails, probably any Cube Rail games, you're familiar with this idea of having train companies that are not player specific, meaning you just buy share from a train company. And if you have ownership in a train company, then you can operate that train company and you try to make that train company more valuable. In the end, you see who has the most money based on share values and other things. And throughout the game, you are laying out track, building networks for your train companies. In some games, I guess you're delivering different things. There's usually dividends involved. Mm-hmm. Which are these points in time in the game where you check how much income am I generating with this train company, and whoever is owning shares in that train company now gets some money.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very similar to 18XX, which is also all about stocks and railroad companies. The big difference, and I'm probably going to get this big difference wrong, But my understanding of the big difference, or what I feel is the big difference, is that 18xx, the network building is very different, as you are putting down these pieces that can kind of go into two different directions. In Cube Rail games, you're building networks in a very simple manner. It's hexagons that you just kind of connect to each other. Or in Age of Rail South Africa, it's just point-to-point connections. Mm-hmm. So I'm, for example, building a connection from Johannesburg to... And now I cannot come up with any single location that's connected to Johannesburg. I only know the main cities in mm-hmm. South Africa. Another big difference to 18xx games is that you have usually less tools in the financial shenanigans that you can do. So more simplified share buying, share selling, all kinds of share operations. There's no train rusting, which happens in 18xx. You have to maintain your trains or keep account of like what is happening with them. And as an end result, you also can spend up your whole day playing an 18xx game, whereas a Cube Rail game, you can get one done in 30 minutes or 1 hour or in 2 hours, depending on the game you're playing. Age of Rail, I would put into the 2 hour category, but my favorite Irish Gauge is in the 1 hour category.
So now after that explanation, I can explain that it feels a bit frustrating that at the end of the game, you're just counting or comparing your shares with somebody else. Okay, I have two blue, Jonas has two blue and one yellow. So if I get a yellow, we're making the exact same money at the end of the game. And that means that the only difference is that Jonas has one coin more than me, then he's winning. Right, yeah. You know?
And you're describing a situation where you have found yourself in a hole where whatever you do in the game, you cannot outdo me. I'm already ahead of you.
Yeah, I guess that's what you said at the beginning.
The runaway leader problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Funny enough, though, last time we played, because my first investment, which is in a blue company, was immediately blocked at the beginning of the game, nobody else invested in that company. Nobody else put money on that company, not even myself. And that ended up giving me good enough dividends to make it to maybe second place or third place. I don't remember the exact placing that I had, but
yeah.
That ended up being almost as good as many of the other well-placed or well-made companies that had been selling five of their shares.
Yes, it was generating money for you, especially in the end, nicely, because in Age of Rail, the shares don't get diluted until the very end. And what I mean by this is that it doesn't really matter if Louis owns another share in the same company that I'm also operating in during the game. That doesn't reduce the amount of money I get from the train company. This is different from other Cube Rails games, where if the train company is earning $100, there's two shares, 50 goes to that person and 50 goes to the other shareholder. But in Age of Rail, you're not dividing a pie during the game.
Yeah, but I think that's the interesting thing. I don't think I was making that much money throughout the game because that was the least valuable company. So it was making me less money than your red company was making you. However, at the end of the game, my blue share, which was unique, ended up being about the same, if not more, than some of the bigger companies.
Yeah, because you were the only shareholder.
Because I was the only shareholder. So that was interesting. I ended up doing not that bad based on the other investments that I had. That blue share ended up being almost as good. The yellow share was, let's say, 22 per share. And the blue was 30 in total. And because there was only one share, it was not 30 divided by 2 or by 3 or by 4. It was just 30 for myself alone. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, but in this game, you really need to be able to generate income throughout the game. Because there will be moments where people will put out shares out for auction. And you need to be able to get those shares.
Yeah.
And I was feeling very bad for you, Louis, because for a very long time in the game, you had no chance. You had no chance of participating in the auctions because you were not able to generate money.
Yeah.
From the blue company. And I was thinking that, you know what, you might be able to come on the top in the end if people collude enough against the leaders, which I was one of.
Yeah.
That can happen. You get a target on your back and then people take you down. And then Louis with his small blue drink company, you know, passes everyone because no one took you as a threat. But that didn't really happen.
It did not happen. I think I had good investments in other companies, so I was not doing bad. I was definitely not in contention for winning, but I was surprised that I was second or third place when I thought I was going to be last place. So that was the surprising thing. But yeah, still frustrating, still not my preferred game.
But let me challenge that thought, because first of all, I don't want to challenge anyone saying that the Cube Rail game felt frustrating to them, because that is a thing that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you have the wrong opinion here. What I'm trying to do is change your perspective here, or consider giving Cube Rail games a second chance, or in this case, a third chance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about the puzzle of the game itself, where it asks you to really think about the positions of other players, and in your case, the game kind of asks you to consider, what do you want to do with this blue company? Do you actually want to invest in this? Do you want to win this blue company in the auction?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that give you very different layers of strategies to think about and ponder, and just this kind of excitement about, well, what's going to happen in the next game? Am I going to learn from my mistakes? Is something else going to happen that I could not expect at all? Mm-hmm. Compared to a more traditional efficiency game where it's like, well, this time I went hard on the rock production. That doesn't work. I need to next time do rock production and sheep collection. That's mm-hmm. the synergizing strategies. Mm-hmm. Whereas these games feel that they are a completely different decision space.
Remind me, is the turn order just based on where you're sitting in the table?
Yeah, it's clockwise turn order.
But it always starts with the person that buys the last share, which is the purple one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the interesting thing. That is what messed up my game last time, where like the particular quote-unquote puzzle, which is something that I should have considered, and next time we're playing, I'm considering, of having the first player being the person that bought the purple, me not buying the purple, and then the second player being the person that bought the yellow company. I think blue company can be easily blocked by purple and by yellow at the beginning of the game. And having that combination where the blue got immediately blocked out of the gate by the person that had bought the yellow company, which was the person who was sitting on the second spot or the third spot of the game, that's what messed up my game. And I should have considered that more. And I kind of considered it when thinking about buying the purple share, where I'm like, okay, I already have blue. If I don't buy the purple share, they might block me. But I never expect that to happen so fast in that game, where I'm like, maybe not. And I don't want to lose all my money before the game starts. So by making the wrong decision of investing on blue, not being able to then do anything else with that company because of the seating arrangements and because who bought the other companies. Yeah, maybe I messed up.
Yeah.
And yes, it was proven that I messed up immediately after the game started.
Yep. So many of these Cube Rail games have this initial stock buying phase where we just auction off one share from every company. Same thing happens here in Age of Rail South Africa. And this is the first phase that lasts maybe 10 minutes, mm-hmm. but it can really mess up your game. You can lose the game with this initial auction phase. Now, I don't think it's something you can kind of expect players playing their first, second, third time a Cube Rail game to realize that, oh, wait, I should also consider the player turn order in terms mm-hmm. of who is buying that purple share that's mm-hmm. going to start. Am I going to be the next player after that player or the very last in turn mm-hmm. order? That is a fun variable to think, but it's not a very fun variable to get wrong. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the rest of the 2-hour game thinking, well, next time I don't make that mistake, but can I please move to the next game so I can, you know, learn how to play this game after I don't do that mistake. Because of this, Irish Cage is still my preferred experience because Irish Cage has much less in terms of scope. There's mm-hmm. much less happening. And I totally get that it's less exciting than Age of Rail South African can be. But it plays in 60 minutes, so it's fun to kind of, well, you don't get so frustrated when you realize that you made some mistakes. You then start to maybe observe what other players are doing and thinking already about the next game. Well, next time, or in 30 minutes, I'm about to do this thing differently if we start a new game. Are you ready for your final rating?
Do I need to repeat it? I guess I'm ready. My final rating is 2 stars. This is an okay game. I'm willing to play it again. I definitely would not recommend it because I don't particularly enjoy it. I don't know if I would enjoy other Cube Rails games besides those that you have mentioned because I have not played any others. So that is my current rating until further notice.
Age of Rails South Africa gets at least 3 out of 4 stars from me. I'm really considering whether I should give it the 4th star. I think the thing that's kind of preventing me from giving it the 4th star is that it feels twice as long as Irish Cage. So Irish Cage is so much easier for me to play or more fun experience in general compared to an Age of Rail, where the latter part of the game is not necessarily that interesting compared to the first part. Irish Cage. That's a 4 out of 4 star game for me.
So you're also reviewing Irish Cage
right
now?
I'm just giving the context here. But if you are hearing Lewis's complaints about Cube Rail games and thinking that I might have those same feelings, skip Cube Rails. These games, they have very sharp edges and experiences where you will just be feeling frustrated, not knowing what's happening. And you're not going to be the only one around the table who is going to have that experience. If you're introducing Cube Rail genre to new players, there's going to be players around the table who are just going to say, no, I don't want to play this game again ever. Stop showing me these train games.
Yeah.
Where was I? So Age of Rail South Africa, it's just a bit more fun, a bit more diversity, more different things happening in the game. And because of this, I feel it's an easier recommend as your first step in the genre. And I'm not a Cube Rail expert, but there's plenty of Cube Rail fans who really, really like Age of Rail South Africa. It's an easy recommend for your first Cube Rail game. Whereas Irish Cage, I feel there's an even higher risk that you are just going to have a bad experience with your friends. So that's Age of Rail South Africa by John Borer. Here, the designer is named as John Borer. John Borer has famously many different pseudonyms: Matthias Pert, David V.H. Peters, Eddie Robbins, Benny Seaman, Harry Wu, and perhaps Martin Wallace.
Really?
Yeah.
But we don't know if they are actually Martin Wallace.
So there is this big dispute about, well, I guess this dispute is solved as the current resolution with the designer of Age of Steam, I think, is such that the latest edition of Age of Steam doesn't have any designers on the cover. And Martin Wallace has said that he is no longer pursuing any kind of credits or anything from the game. And he encourages people to purchase the current edition. John Borer's dad was a patent lawyer. That's another detail I know. But the story is that Age of Steam, when it first came out, had the designer name Martin Wallace on it. And then John Borer later claimed that, no, it was actually me who designed it.
Okay.
Using the pen name Martin Wallace. And by the way, the company was released under Martin Wallace's publishing company.
Interesting.
So go figure.
All right. That's interesting. Okay. Now you have a little bit of board game history there as well with the mysterious John Borer. All right. Next up, we have a review of Moon Colony Bloodbath. Moon Colony Bloodbath is a chaotic sci-fi board game from 2025 designed by Donald X. Baccarino, designer of Dominion and pretty much nothing else. Well, there's Kingdom Builder, but...
A Kingdom Builder. Come on.
But I don't know about that game.
It has its fans.
It has its fans. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it's a solid game.
All right.
Don't take that away from Mr. Baccarino.
All right. Well, we're talking about Moon Colony Bloodbath, which is a game where players try to build and maintain a colony on the moon while everything steadily goes wrong. At its core, the game is about building an engine and then watching it fall apart. We have discussed this game, particularly in the previous episode, in the Golden Geek Awards.
Oh yeah, true. I was wondering when have we discussed this, but yeah.
But I'll still give a quick overview because I think that's important to understand the game and what the discussion will have. And I prepared it, so I want to read it. Each player starts with a small colony, some resources, a handful of building cards, and 30 colonists. The goal is simple. Have the most colonists surviving when the game ends. You may ask, what is the twist? Well, I'll tell you what is the twist, Jonas.
What is the twist? Oh, I asked too late. I missed my cue.
Okay, let's start that. You may ask, what is the twist, Jonas?
Should I ask it now?
Yes, ask it, please.
What is the twist?
Well, the twist is that the game usually ends because someone's colony gets completely wiped out. The game runs on a shared deck of cards. Every turn, a card is flipped and everyone resolves it at the same time. There are many types of cards, but I would say there are four main types of cards I would consider. There are the starting cards, which are war cards and trouble cards. War cards, which let you take actions like mining for money, farming for food, researching new cards or building structures. And then trouble cards, which add the next event. Then there are the bad cards, which are the event cards, which introduce disasters like accidents, hunger, system failures, and rubber cards, which are pretty much flavorful bad events. And all of these events, most of the time, will be just killing your colonists. The third type of card is the twist and development cards, which are effects that can help or hurt, like trade 2 money for 4 food, trade 2 food for 3 colonists, lose 3 food, lose 3 money.
Wow, this is so exciting, these lose 3 money, gain 2 apples. What's the... Why do I care? What's the twist?
It's okay.
What's the twist?
All the cards above belong to the main shared deck. Then there are the building cards. These are personal, and this is where you're building your engine. Many cards will give you special powers, but they will also instruct you to add a card to the main deck. So this is where you are introducing robots, you're introducing the development cards, all of the cards mentioned above. All of the buildings have a cost, but most importantly, all of the buildings have a house number of colonists.
Still not excited.
I'm explaining to the listener. So at the start, the deck is relatively safe. Half of the cards at least are useful work actions. 2 of the cards are just useful twist actions. And just 2 of the cards add some of the events, and the first events are not that bad. But as the game progresses, the game or players will start adding more cards to their engines, which will add more cards to the deck, including dangerous events, murderous robots. So that means that the odds of bad things happening steadily increases. So early on, you're building your colony, getting resources, creating combos with some buildings and perks, and you feel really happy about. And it feels just like a light engine building game. But then the tone shifts. More and more negative cards enter the decks. Disasters stack up, colonies die, and when you don't have colonies left to die, then you need to start destroying buildings. And suddenly you're not building your engine anymore, you're just trying to survive longer than the rest of the people. You're just trying to survive the next card flip.
Yeah, to me, like, this feels like a sci-fi horror movie.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I said that in the previous episode. It really starts positive. And the first time I played this, I thought that this is not going to turn bad for me. I think maybe I cracked the game. Yeah. I think I solved the game. I'm actually going to do really well. And at some point, you realize that, there's a little bit of a bump on the road. Well, and I can handle that. And then it's just spiraling down.
And then it's just like, oh, that was terrible. I have almost no colonies left. And the deck is just worse. So the tension comes from this slow collapse. I still have to read a little bit more.
Oh, Luis, what happened with our 1 minute rules description?
It was 1 minute? I thought it was 5 minutes. Anyway, every card draw becomes suspenseful. You will get a useful action or something that destroys part of your colony. Most likely, the second thing at the end. Something that destroys your colony. However, since every building includes a number of colonists, when the building gets destroyed or die, everybody just runs scared to the headquarters, which is your main board. And this is where the last stand happens in the game. And then the game continues like this, flip a card, resolve it, until a player loses all their colonies or the event deck runs out. I've never played a game where the event deck runs out. We've been close once, but anyway, at that point, whoever has the most surviving colonies wins. So, yes, Jonas, I don't know. I actually tried to time it this to 3 minutes.
1 minute was the
same. But you kept interrupting.
Yeah, because I was looking at the timer and I was like, after 1 minute, I was like, this is, I can
jump
in.
You said that whenever it makes sense to do that review, and I think in this case it makes sense because I was like, hey, I can make it quickly. And then this will allow us the listener to understand, like, what is special about this game?
Yeah, but here's my big thesis with these rules, big rules descriptions is that the listener, after first or second minute, they zone out. No one is going to remember, wait, where do you get two apples? Does that matter? What does it happen here? What does happen here?
It's okay. I maybe overkilled it with the type of cards. But I think everything else was still maybe interesting.
All right. Now, is this an interesting game, though?
I think this is surprisingly interesting. I think the first time I played it, I was like, yeah, it's okay. But then the more we played it, the more I felt like, oh, yeah, no, there's actually interesting strategies and ways to try to survive and to make combos. Not to win, but to lose slowest in a way.
Yeah.
It feels like you're always losing this game because it feels like a little bit ridiculous that, oh my God, I'm losing 3 colonies. And then next event, 4 colonies. Next robot, 7 colonies. Oh, but I get an apple because it was a farming robot or whatever. So it feels a little bit ridiculous, but there is interesting strategies to try to explore in order to survive the longest.
In the beginning, you get some building cards.
Yeah.
And the building cards are basically your engine cards. That defines what engine do you have.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take those actions, but each building is usually associated with a specific action. So that action gets boosted and then you find this synergy that, oh, in this game, I'm just going to farm and then I go mine and then I farm and then I mine.
Yeah.
Now, what would you say to a person who says that the only decision you make in the beginning is you look at those 4 building cards you have and decide I'm going to build this type of engine and then you just execute?
I think that's a valid strategy. It really does matter what you're trying to do with that particular set of cards that you start with. Because in every game, before your engine starts really blossoming, it's going to start getting destroyed. So you have to plan for at most having maybe 6 buildings and then they're going to start getting destroyed and how to move forward from that. So you do need to have a strategy that depends on the cards that you draw at the beginning. But then that strategy could be, hey, this is going to be a strategy of drawing a lot of buildings. And then try to get buildings that allow me to discard cards for more resources or something like that.
So are you saying that you do get to make more decisions after the first picks?
Yes.
Because what you could do is you're just going to explore the deck of buildings, just keep kind of drawing more and more building cards to see, hey, can I get something more different happening with my engines?
Yeah, I guess in my ramblings, that's what I was trying to say. Plus, I think if you have an engine that makes money, for example, then you could try to just spend time fishing more cards in order to get maybe cards that were like more expensive or impossible for other people to buy because they don't have enough money. We will like put a robot on the deck, but it will give you a lot of colonies. So it's just like, I don't mind. This is what I'm trying to do this time.
Yeah. I have to say that the engine building part of Moon Colony Plot Path seems pretty simple.
Yeah.
As in, it's pretty easy to see that this building is great for this action. And well, this other building is also great for this action. So I guess I want to build these 2 things. It's pretty easy to calculate which one you should do first.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, there's always 2 sides to everything. Maybe sometimes it makes sense to build that one first. But based on what resources you have at the moment and what's going to happen next, you usually are able to make a decision around it. So I do feel that the engine building decisions are fairly
simple.
Light.
Yeah.
So that's not going to hook you into the game. No. Unless you are looking for a very light decision space.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. Like, this is a light game. It's surprisingly fast as well. It's taking, what, once you know the game, maybe half an hour to play? 45 minutes at most?
Yeah, sounds
and
about right.
In that sense, I think one thing we haven't mentioned, there's two twist cards, and most of the time, those are the only twist cards that will appear in the entire game. And those also matter for the strategy. If the cards are like something that maybe allows you to convert apples for money, then maybe you want to have an engine that produces more apples so that you can, they have free money, because those twist cards will always appear. So that is also part of the decision making, but indeed it's a little bit set for you with the cards that you get at the beginning and those two twist cards. But yeah. I think they matter.
Yeah, they do definitely matter. Probably in your first game, you're not going to pay too much attention to the twist cards because there's already too much information to take in with your building cards. But at least already in my second game, I was asked to see, hey, what are those two twist cards that we're going to add to the deck? And I looked at, okay, I need that thing and I need that thing. Then I looked at my buildings and I thought that, okay, I have to do this building first and then that building. Those are going to synergize nicely with those twist cards.
Exactly.
I could do all of that thinking pretty fast.
Yeah.
In the third game, I tried to play a little bit differently. There, I really tried to turn on the heat.
Yeah.
Meaning there are buildings that add escalation to the shared deck, meaning things are going to get worse faster.
Yeah.
But those cards usually give you a nice buffer of people that you can kill.
Yeah. Exactly.
That your fellow players won't have.
Exactly.
But I didn't succeed in that game. I just couldn't find enough buildings to keep that escalation going on. But absolutely like a very fun strategy to play as well. But after those three times exploring that strategy and then just kind of like that basic engine building strategy, I don't know if there is more Moon Colony Plot Path in me, or at least from a this kind of game brain perspective of if my brain really is looking for a nice gaming puzzle and crunchy decision.
I would challenge you a bit there because I think there are at least six more plays there that I'm like, hey, I want to discover this crunchiness and maybe I want to get to the end of it. And I think the end is reachable. It's not like an infinite opportunity of discovery, at least not without expansions, but maybe the expansions are on the way. But like, yeah, I would like to explore it more. I would like to try a couple more strategies, discover the game a bit more, and it feels doable. And in that sense, I feel encouraged to play this game more because of this achievability of full discovery. And that's my position. Do you hear that or do you not at all resonate?
Not really. Yeah, because I don't really know how much there is more to discover here. However, Moon Colony Plot Path is available in the Helsinki Library, and I'm on the queue for it. And I'm very happy the day I will finally get it and I get to play it with Chilla, because I think we're going to have a lot of fun time playing this game. And I can see myself getting three more games plays at least.
Yeah.
More fun.
And tell me what you think after that.
Yeah, after that, you know, but after those three plays, I don't know, maybe that then I'm done.
Yeah, I can sympathize with that. But how many games do you play more than 10 times?
Now, yes. So that's the interesting part here is that, well, how many plays did I need to get out of Moon Colony Plot Path?
Yeah.
Because here's the twist. I had hecking fun.
Hey, what's the twist, Jonas?
The twist is that I had a hecking good time playing Moon Colony Plot Path, all of those three games. The first time I played it, I was in love with the novelty of it. The theme is so much fun.
Yeah.
You're just laughing with your fellow players as everything just collapses around everyone. And it's just so fun to see that one player who is running last. Yeah. You can just kind of see that they are not going to make it. After that game, I thought that, well, I had a lot of fun time. I had a lot of fun playing it. I don't know if I'm going to have that much fun in my second and third game, because now I have seen the joke. Then we played it a second time, and I had equal amount of fun, and we played back-to-back games. So then we started a third one immediately after the second one, and I had as much fun as I had the first time and the second time. So if I'm now going to get three more plays with Chilla, I'm going to have as much fun from those games, and then I'm not going to have any fun. Guess what? I got plenty of fun. This is like a rare joy that this game brought me. Like, this made me giggle like a little kid playing it. Yeah.
Yeah, and also, like, every next play that I had, I was able to enjoy also the story that the game was telling more. I didn't need to think about the strategies that much. I was thinking about the strategies, but I didn't need to stress about figuring out, because maybe I've internalized them a bit more. And I was able to enjoy like, oh yeah, now I have the blood bank or like the cryogenics or the bunker or whatever. And then just playing with the story and having fun. Like, oh, now my bunker is gone. Everybody's running. And just imagining that happening was really easy to do in this game. So definitely a game that is a lot of fun. So, Jonas, are you ready to give your review?
Yes. 3 out of 4 stars from me. The reason why it's not 4 out of 4 is because, hey, I don't think the replayability is necessary there. But this game truly brought me some real joy. I'm not surprised that a lot of people have had fun with this game. I have heard some people bouncing off from this game as well. I'm not surprised about that either. I remember you saying that your first game was a bit lackluster.
Yeah.
But what you told, I remember you telling me, and this is, I think, is a good advice for listeners, is that because there's a shared deck. Share that responsibility of flipping those cards. One person is always operating the deck for that round. Just keep flipping those cards. That's fun because when it's your turn to turn the cards over, it's, you know, even the robot that's going to kill your building and your colonists, even that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
To be the person who gets to draw it for everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Have everybody involved so it just doesn't become a one-person game, a one person announcing the cards. And yeah, for me, it's also a 3 out of 4 stars. I think it's a game that I could easily recommend. I can see some people bouncing off as well, as you say, if they are more into the engine building, and because it feels that things start breaking apart too fast, so then it can feel the opposite of rewarding.
No, I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is that it's simple engine building. That's like, this building boosts up your mining, this building boosts up your farming, and you have, how many buildings do you usually have? Maybe maximum at 6.
And I agree with that, which is simple engine building, but I also think that just when you have the card that will synergize with everything, that's when things start falling apart. And then you lose the first card that would synergize perfectly. And then your whole strategy. And then you're like, and I finally now had the money, which I've been waiting to get for the entire game. And now things just, like, now I cannot do the engine building. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's fun to be the player, or it's fun to be the player who gets to watch that player have that experience.
Yes.
Because you're just laughing to yourself, knowing that I'm going to win this game. You're going to lose.
But then I think that the point is understanding that that's the game, and then not playing to, like, you're not going to have a perfect engine. Never.
Yes.
So just do what you can while you can, and know that this is going to start getting bad sooner than you think.
Yeah.
And if people understand that, people approach it with this, if there's a good teach involved, then I think this is a game that most people will enjoy, because again, the engine building part is not that hard to get good enough, at least.
Yeah. I pointed that as a criticism, but it's also a pro of this game.
Yeah.
If the engine building would be more complex, you wouldn't be able to focus on the story that's being told by the game.
Indeed. So that is our review for Moon Colony Bloodbath by Donald X. Vaccarino. Now moving on to the topic of the episode. Board game evening group events, also known as board game meetups. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Jonas, what do you think we mean about the good, the bad, and the ugly?
Yeah, I'm looking at our show notes, and this is all the information I have about this this topic today. So what can happen is that I'm going to completely derail this conversation. Maybe you were expecting some other direction here. The good, the bad, and the ugly. I think I was the first one to suggest this topic.
Yeah.
And I was thinking it from the perspective of meetups were a great way for me to get deeper into this hobby. But then I have kind of felt that I have maybe overgrown, like grown out of the meetup that we frequent.
Yeah.
And then there are these common complaints that happen, not just in our meetup, but like in meetups all over the world, these common complaints that keep happening, even though there's also like a lot of fun stuff happening. So that's what I thought about with this, the good, the bad, and the ugly. There's some good stuff, some bad stuff, and then there's also some ugly stuff. However, I think in our meetup, we are very, you know, blessed that we don't see the ugly parts.
No, at least not in ours.
Yeah.
So at least how I define it is like the good is pros of meetups in general, like just a meta discussion about what's good about meetups, what benefits can meetups have. The bad is the opposite, like cons of meetups, what can be bad about meetups. And the ugly, I decided I was like, it was going to be me ranting about what annoys me about meetups personally. Yeah. So I think at least that's how I think we can maybe frame the conversation. Like the good, we can just maybe list good things about meetups. If you already have a list, maybe we can just bounce back and forward different points and just discuss over what can be good of that. Then the bad, and then we can maybe rant a bit. What do we feel now about our group? Why are you saying like you're bouncing off of that? And then what would make you come back to that meetup more? Or will you be willing to come back? Or if you were organizing, what would you change? And again, this is not to throw dirt into our particular meetup. I think the person that is organizing it does a really good job, and we have never volunteered to help or anything like that. So we have no ground to stand on to be like, this should be different. But hey, everybody is allowed to complain, and this is our venue to do that. And then if at any point anybody in the meetup listens to this, hopefully this will trigger some change either in them pushing us to help or them helping, or then somebody just being like, hey, let's have a discussion about how can we actually improve this or whatever.
Can I add one thing there?
Yes, of course.
You said that the organizer is doing a good job. I think they're doing an excellent, an absolute excellent job. I could not do the same job that person is doing.
Yes.
I think there are just these dynamics that you cannot escape from meetups.
Yes.
And for example, this organizer, they cannot be around every table all the time and making sure everything is happening perfectly all the time. It's just one person divided between multiple different tables.
Yeah, and we discussed this before before we presented the episode, like, but I just wanted to say, like, if it sounds bad, it's just because, hey, we have feelings, and then this is something that I think if more people were interested in helping the organizer, then maybe this could be improved. But again, I agree. It's doing an excellent job managing, communicating, organizing, but it's only one person and therefore there's nothing more. But maybe if more people were to pull resources and step up to the game, including ourselves, then some interesting things could evolve.
Yes, but that requires like work.
I know, and like, that's a problem, right?
Like, I have to put
effort. I don't have time. I'm already doing this, this podcast, man.
Exactly.
This is my extra board game contribution. But anyway, so what's the good, Jonas? What is the very first thing that comes to your mind when you say like, okay, this is a pro of meetups?
The pro of meetups.
Sorry, not meetups. Board game group evening events.
Yeah, the big pro of board game group evening events for me is that you can enter a space where you don't have to convince anyone to play a game with you or suggest that, hey, should we play a game? Everyone is there to play games. Particularly great thing about public meetups is that you also get to meet a lot of new people. So that's like a great way to expand your board gaming social circle. Because with some people, like we met at the meetup.
Yeah.
And I have made some like really great friends, including, of course, you at the meetup. And I don't know, without the meetup, none of that would have happened.
Indeed. I've met a lot of people that are new to the city, new to the town, that they're just either visiting or for an exchange, or they just arrive. And this is, especially if you like board games, this is a great way of low barrier entrance into a group and maybe into potentially making friends like we've become. So I can definitely see that as a big pro of a meetup. Also, besides you don't need to convince anybody to play games, I don't think you need to be that social. Like you don't need to be good at socializing. You can just sit down and within the context of a game, you just can interact with people, even though you would normally be shy or you would not like to talk, and you are quote unquote forced to talk or forced to interact with somebody, which can break the ice a bit.
Yeah. So yeah, very facilitated interaction. Like I mentioned those developer meetups earlier. Yeah. So that's the first time I started, you know, even going to any types of evening group activities, also known as meetups. Even to this day, if I ever go to a developer meetup, those breaks between the talks are a bit awkward.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people just trying to come up with something to talk about, especially if the talk wasn't that interesting.
Yeah.
If it was an interesting talk, hey, then there's like plenty of conversation happening. In the board game meetup, that doesn't happen because everything is super facilitated all the time.
Yeah, yeah. You're just sitting down on a table and hey, I'm somebody. Sometimes it's like you don't introduce each other until like half the game. Yeah. Oh, what's your name, by the way?
Yeah, now that we're counting the scores.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's really good. One interesting thing that I was reading about in like some lists is like, hey, there's no screens. Like you are actually interacting, socializing with people in this age of digitalization.
Yeah.
Where like you were saying in the Golden Geek conversation last week, we're like, oh, BGA is the biggest source of votes. And I'm like, well, that sucks. It should be real people playing with real games at a table.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what a meetup does, right? Like you are playing and there's a toy factor there. You're moving things around. You're touching pieces. You're interacting with people.
Exactly. Put those hands into use. Don't just touch keyboard.
Yes. Don't touch your screen.
Yeah, touch a cardboard piece.
Yes.
Yeah, a wooden meeple.
Yes.
Move it across the map.
Exactly.
Roll a die.
Roll a die.
Shuffle a deck.
Exactly.
Deal it out.
Hey, so shuffle a deck. Something I didn't have in the list, but dexterity, like practicing dexterity.
Oh, dexterity. That's even better because I was thinking about poker chips. Oh, someone brought poker chips. I can play with those poker chips. But dexterity games, oh, that's a whole other level of tactility and finger dexterity.
Yes. It's also mentally, like their mentally stimulation. You feel like you are, or at least personally, I love them because it lets me forget everything about the outside world, lets me focus on the game, but also lets me feel like I'm exercising my brain, or I'm thinking, I'm doing like some thinking. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to create a strategy that is somehow making me think and think hard, but not think hard in an exhausting way. Unless the game is too stressful.
But. Yeah, but I think here we might be just going into the benefits of board games, but I 100% agree with that take or this feeling of, hey, I can forget about everything else, but really focus on something. You know, sometimes when I have a really tough work day, a lot of difficult conversations, for example. And then I get to home, I just want to play a really difficult board game with Sheila. It's just something fun with the brain of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I engage it fully into something completely different makes it much more easier for me to move from work self to personal self.
Yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that. And I think the cool thing about the meetup is you have a regular day where that is happening, where you know, if I don't have time any other day in the week, at least for me, Thursday is my board game day.
Yeah. And that, there's meetups, it's happening on Thursdays. And it's the same thing for me. Whenever I look at the week and it's Wednesday, then I think, well, tomorrow, by the way, it's Wednesday now that we're recording, tomorrow is a meetup day.
Yes.
So even if it's been a sucky week, hey, tomorrow I get to go to the meetup.
Exactly.
Or almost like I have to go to the meetup because it's in the calendar.
I have to. Yeah. Sometimes, maybe that can be a con, like, oh no, I have to go to the meetup. No, you don't have to do anything.
No, this was more in like a positive sense of it forces you to find that time from your schedule.
Exactly. Mm. Or having that time blocked.
Yes.
Also, I think by going there regularly and by going them constantly with the same group of people, besides you can meet new people, it's like creates a sense of belonging to with like those people. Like create a sense of like, oh yeah, this is my board game crew. With us, it became maybe a smaller group of us that became like the board game crew that also plays other times. But it started in the meetup.
Yes.
And I don't have any other.
So should we move to the bad?
Yes. So what are the cons of a board game group evening event?
Well, one con is that it is a rare treat. We live in a capital city, which means there's a lot of people coming here from all over the world or all over Finland. A lot of things happening, and therefore there are also board game meetups available for us. If we go to a smaller city, well, now we don't have a board game meetup available for us.
But wouldn't that be a downside of the city, not the board game meetup?
Yeah, it is. But I'm just saying that, you know, this meetup thing that we are praising here, I'm pretty sure that there are listeners who think that, hey, sounds all great, not happening in my community.
That
is true. Not within the 50-kilometer radius, no meetups happening here.
That is true. That is true. But then start one. Start a meetup. Start a small meetup. Not you. I mean, but like, if you have games, if you want to play more games, hey, try doing something at your library or your community center or whatever.
Yeah. And so, you know what? It is a growing hobby.
Yeah,
for sure. There's more and more people around you that are getting into the hobby. It's less of a niche thing, no matter where you live. So it might be that there's other people who are just waiting for someone to start that meetup around you. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually started one with a group of friends. I didn't start it, but I tried to create where like we would meet regularly.
Yeah.
It was just such a small group and maybe not open. It was a Facebook group that I created with some friends that it was just like a lot of people would just maybe not that into board games as I thought, where like it just broke apart. And that was before I found the current meetup group. But anyway, downsides of meetups. I think the opposite of community is that when people see each other a lot, then these small groups can create and form inside jokes that can be alienating for new people. Or like if people don't know the dynamics, I've seen it a lot of times where people come and they're not sure what to do. They're not sure if they can join. They're just like maybe awkwardly just standing there.
Yeah.
And there's no like certainty. So that can feel a bit alienating.
Yeah. And we mentioned that we have kind of formed our inner group in the meetup. And every now and then I go to a table where I am clearly in an inner group that I'm not a part of. Like click. And then I can feel how it might feel when playing with us as a new player.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like jabbing. That's not directed at you at all. You don't get to be part of the jokes.
Yeah.
If it's an interactive game, the interaction is happening mostly with the other players. You don't get to participate that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another bad thing, another con is about games. Two things. Complex games, I think, can be intimidating for new players, especially if they're coming and they're just starting the hobby. Maybe they're not that familiar, but they want to play something easy. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, simple games can alienate repeated gamers. Like we're playing Secret Hitler. There was a point where everybody was playing Secret Hitler all the time.
Yes.
And like, oh, again, we have to play a social doc. Why can we not play something with more meat and bones in it? So I think about the games, it can be a bit hard to find maybe the right mix, the right match of good games that a meetup should have.
Yes. And before we formed our inner circle and started gaming more between us and every now and then, you know, not going to the meetup, but just having our private group on Thursdays, I had so much more expectations for every Thursday meetup where I really hope to play games that I like to play. I didn't need to play my games. I just saw like a lot of people bringing games that I thought that, hey, I want to play those games. But then we end up playing games that I don't think are fun at all.
Yeah.
And then if you do that the whole evening, it's kind of disappointing of like, oh, this was my one time of gaming this week. And now we played that thing. I wanted to play Imperial 2030 that Manuel brought here.
Yeah.
But now that we have, you know, this other group happening, I have much less pressure for this one Thursday evening. I'm much more like laissez-faire about the things. If I don't end up playing the games I like, if I end up playing the games I hate, I'm still kind of like, yeah, so what? It was still kind of like fun, nonetheless.
Definitely.
I think I can go on the podcast and then complain about those bad games.
Exactly. And I think, that's, I think, something that I've noticed happening is like, there's some games that are brought over and over and I'm like, that game's not even good. Like, why is that person taking over that table and then just luring in three random observers just to play that game? And I'm like, oh, I wish this game would not come to the meetup.
Yeah. Can I use that as a segue to kind of maybe my biggest issue with meetups is the what game should we play game, which seems to happen in this dynamic where you have, let's say, seven people who are now not playing a game.
Yeah.
And you, these seven people need to figure out what game should they play.
Yeah.
There's two tables available. So there is the one option of splitting. So you could do four and three. Or should you play together? Mm-hmm. Maybe you should play with seven people. And it's this endless conversation. I mean, it's not endless. It always comes to some kind of resolution. But to me, it feels endless.
Yeah.
Of this going back and forth of should we split? Should we not split? If we don't split, do we play this? Do we not play that? And the game that gets picked, it just seems to be completely random. Feels something that was not the optimal choice at all.
Yeah.
Just something where someone was done with the discussion and be like, hey, well, we were just kind of gravitating towards this. Now the path of least resistance is pulling us towards Secret Hitler. Oh, let's just open the Secret Hitler box and let's just play a Secret Hitler.
And I think that's also moving on. Also sometimes a problem of space is like, okay, we are seven people and there's only one table. So we have to play together.
Yeah, but that I understand. But
I think that's a problem, potentially a meta problem with meetups.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But a very specific problem with our meetup sometimes, which we'll move into the ugly soon, where there's too many people of us or just we don't fit, or too many other people from other groups or just coming to that bar and just playing a random game. And they're like, okay, they don't want us to join. I would love to join them. They're playing a game that I like, but they're not part of the meetup. So I cannot just come and like, hey, guys, can I be the fourth in your game that supports four people, but you're only three friends, you know? So that definitely can feel frustrating if it happens multiple times as well. I think those are the main negatives. I think most of them are a flip side of the positive that we said. And those are just potential things that could happen.
And there's also ways to mitigate this stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm more and more during this planning before the meetup, asking anyone like, hey, is anyone excited about a particular game? Does anyone want to play something specific? Or I say like, hey, I have these games. I want to play these. Or I know someone is coming and I know they have a game I want to play. I say like, hey, can you bring that game? I want to play that. And then it kind of removes this annoying conversation about what to play.
Yeah, but then maybe let's move to the ugly because I think sometimes what happens is that you do that, but you're
are we
not...
on the, are we like, is this the last thing you're going to say before we go to the ugly? Or are we now
in the ugly?
We're in the ugly.
Yeah, we're in the ugly where I feel sometimes you say that, but at least personally, I'm not sure when I arrive, I will have a table to play at. Even if I arrive at 6, it's not certain that...
A free table
to play this game that... Mm. Okay, we've organized it, but it's not certain that we'll have a table. And I think that's a problem, particularly in our meetup, because the space is not big enough. It always feels full.
Yes.
Because it's a bar that is half board games and half video games.
Yep.
And then that takes some of the space.
Yeah, and there's been like some fun... I think a year ago, two or three times, it happened that another board game meetup was there at the same exact time as us.
Yeah.
And it was like really at some point, luckily, the two organizers had a conversation of like, hey, we were here first.
Yeah.
So this place is not big enough for two groups on the same day. You need to find another place or you need to find another time. And also that group was smaller than us.
Yeah.
So I feel very justified that we stood our ground and told them to get the heck out.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, ideally, we would have a space that is 0.5 times bigger.
Yeah.
And again, this is not a diss on the organizer of our thing because I don't think that place exists in Finland, a place that would be like as accommodating, also as spacious, as good for the table size, I think. Not spacious, but the table space that it has.
Yeah.
I think most other places would either be not dedicated to board games. Therefore, like more people could come and it was like, it's a random assortment of number of tables available or the tables are not big enough to play board games. So
yeah,
it's just a reality of living in Finland, I think, or living in Helsinki, where like there might not be a better sort spot than that one.
Yep. What you could do is limit the size of the meetup. But that's also sad.
But I think technically that is already there. Like the meetup is for 20 people. For 20 people registering. But half of the people don't register anymore.
So the meetup, because this meetup is organized in the meetup application.
Yeah.
And there is a 20-person limit.
Yeah.
And I think at some point in time, people use the meetup regularly. I also use the meetup regularly.
Yeah.
There were a couple of regulars who didn't use the meetup, but I felt it was only a few people. I don't use that app anymore at all. And I just show up because I feel at some point people just stopped caring.
Yeah.
And before that time, people were asking like, hey, the meetup is full. Can I still come? Is that okay? But these days, people just show up.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's sometimes too many people in that bar.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like, because one option here would be to split the meetup group.
Yeah, one option would be like, and again, this is where I'm like, if somebody listens to this or if we want to step up, this is the things that we could come as an idea. I don't know if it would be a better thing, but it could be an experiment of like, okay, if it's full, then open a secondary meetup that will meet somewhere else. And then,
but it's been done already 2 times in the history. Yeah, it was like split into Tuesdays. So Tuesdays, there's also gaming available. And then the Tuesday just dies off because everyone wants to be in the main event on the Thursday.
Yeah, but again, like I think the main point is the uncertainty, right? Like I think if there was more clarity into like, hey, if you're not here, then go there, then it would be a bit easier to manage like, oh, I want to play with Jonas. Jonas is not in group A. I will then tell Jonas, hey, Jonas, let's go to group B and sign up to group B, something like that. And let's just play that game that you're organizing in the secondary location or whatever. Again, harder to achieve, more organization needed, but maybe that could solve the, but I really want to go there because I want to see these people. Maybe that's not solvable. Maybe everybody just wants to go there and see all of the same people. But I can imagine that maybe doesn't matter to everyone that much.
Yeah. So there are these new board game meetup specific applications available. Mm-hmm. I think there's a couple that are trying to make it where you basically organize your meetup through there. And then people can announce the games that are going to get organized. Hey, I'm organizing this game in this table. And then you can just kind of see people signing into different tables. And based on that, you're going to assign the tables finally. Now, the big problem here is that you need to get the people into that new application.
Yeah.
Which is not going to happen.
No.
Everyone's tired of signing up for yet another app. And this is just for the meetup that I wanted to come visit one time. This seems very complex.
Yeah, for sure. But and this, again, it would require a bit more organization. It would require a bit more talking to everyone. Like, hey, like having a... Hey, let's have an annual general meeting for the meetup and see what people want. And again, this is something I would not like to do or I don't have time to do. I feel interested of doing, but it's one of those things like if I had more time in my life, maybe I would volunteer to help with this.
I would not even want to participate
in
such a meeting.
But I think that would be interesting to be like, hey, how can we solve these issues? Can we make, there is clearly 2 people at least that are not fully satisfied that maybe would rather not go there anymore. So can we make it work that if there's more of these people that are satisfied, if it's more than a critical mass, I don't know, 25%, then maybe there is a point to make this a bit better for everyone so that we can keep this going instead of losing 25% of our members who are some of the oldest members just because they don't find enjoyment in the way things are done now.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes like you're cycling the gamers. And it's just new gamers and the old gamers are just casual regulars, but they don't really come here.
Yeah, I would love to have more conversation around this because there's a WhatsApp channel for the whole meetup. There are so many members there. Let me see quickly. 175 members in that group. So it would be kind of fun to have that conversation there to see what are other people thinking about this. I have sometimes thought that, you know what, maybe I should just start that shadow meetup on the same exact Thursday, but just in a different place. Yeah. And say, for example, we're going to play only really complex games here.
Yeah.
And that can make it easier with the amount of people coming to the meetup and make it clearer for people who want to play really complex games to then know that, I'm going to go there if I want to have
But then you have to organize that. You have to find a space. You have to find a space with good tables where tables fit. So it's, again, it's...
Yeah, but in this case, I would just do it super unorganized way of saying that, hey, it's going to be at this pub. Mm-hmm. If there's a table, we're going to use a table. If not, then, well, tough luck. We can't play there. And I think because of that, it would fail after a couple of weeks as people cannot trust my meetup organizing skills at all.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to counteract your, it has been done before. Because I remember the times when it was like every...
Oh, you make me sound like such a kind of these people in workplaces and other places where like, we tried that, Louis. Doesn't work. 5 years ago, we tried painting it red.
Well, that's what, that's what you did.
We tried that email.
That's what you're doing.
We tried the email application. No. No one wants email. They want to send the letters.
We had a time where every week it was on Thursday in Kaisla and every other week was on Friday in the Cafe Board Game. And I think there was really working. I think it was just like some people would come on Thursday, some people would come on Fridays. And I think at some point it was like, every week was on Thursday, but also every other week was on Friday or something like that. That now I don't remember the specifics, but for sure it was like at least every other week Thursday and every other week Friday. That was for sure happening, and that worked. I think just Tuesday is not a time where people want to play board games if you have the Thursday. Maybe they're too busy with other stuff or they have more work those days. So I think at least like the alternating dates or the adding some to the mix can work, but it really matters where and when. And maybe the location is important as well. And we just haven't been able to find a location because I can imagine that arcade is really full on Fridays, for example.
Yep. And our organizer, he has communicated very clearly that his number one priority with any location venue is that he can book tables in advance.
Exactly.
So that he can kind of make sure that people find a table to play on. And that those places that you listed to Kaisla, for example, simply doesn't do it anymore.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, like, I think we only have two tables booked.
Well, those are two tables more than zero tables.
Yes. But we always need seven tables. Or nowadays, like, because there's so many people, we need seven tables. So that's like, okay, is there a way to fix that? Is there a way to do more? Is there a way to make sure that arcade at least reserves five tables for us instead of two? So I think that's a tricky thing. We're like, if we maybe be like, okay, we're going to go, and then they feel the pain of like not having us for 2 weeks, what would happen?
Oh, so maybe you should get hired as this negotiator, consultant.
Exactly.
To go to arcade and say,
be like, hey, we're not coming anymore if you don't give us more tables.
No. You don't negotiate like that. You come there and say like, it would be a shame if the Thursday board game evening gathering would not happen here anymore.
Would it? And then they would be like, oh, but we have it in our website. We advertise it in our website. And I would be like, oh, sure. That's how people actually find you, your website.
Would it be a shame if your website goes down? Louis, are you about to hack them? is that how far you're going to go?
I know.
That's illegal. You can't do
that. I know. This is all hypotheticals, Jonas. Anyway, another bad thing, or another ugly thing, I think, is what you said, like, there's many times not enough new games. You have to either play simple games because there's not enough space or time, or because maybe there's no enough heavy board gamers gathering with the games that day. Where it's just like, oh, I wish I didn't bring board games. I wish somebody else will bring board games, but the only games that there are is like simple or medium or light games. And it's like, damn it. If somebody was as invested as you and me in board games, in finding new games, then maybe there would be more of these fancy new games, which I don't think there's enough of in the meetup.
Although, I don't know. I feel like there's...
I think it's becoming better.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But then my problem now is, again, like the space sometimes.
Yeah. And I remember like every now and then realizing that I shouldn't bring my games to these meetups because I'm not going to get them played. People bring a lot of their own games that they want to get played.
Yeah.
I'll play those ones. And then I show up at a meetup night without any games. And then I'm stuck with three other new people who didn't break any games either. And we were just like, well, let's see what's in the shared collection of this bar. And there's The Mind.
Yeah.
There is a Bullet. And there is...
Bullet? You mean Bang?
Bang. Yeah, Bang. Yeah, not Bullet.
The new
Bang.
Game Bullet.
That's also in the game that exists. And then one thing I think is very fun, it's a Wonderful World, which I think is a great game. But it's like, it's become the bar game where when people clearly don't have anything else to play, they take that game out and play that.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know, some
another
kind of, I don't
thing.
Know if this is like fun for anyone else except me. Maybe it's to you. Maybe it's, there's a small chance it's also fun for listeners. But this like, It's a Wonderful World thing that I feel like it's at some point was like a meme level game in the meetup. I was in Spain with Chilla for work stuff. And we went, I said that, hey, you know what? I've learned that it's really fun to go to meetups in different cities, which something, hey, by the way, another thing about meetups, there's like people who come to the Helsinki meetup who are visiting Helsinki, Finland. And they thought, like, hey, I'm going to come here to see how it is. And I learned that, hey, if I go to a new country, it's really fun to go to a meetup because you get that local connection to see how it is to live in this city. So I told that to Chilla that, hey, we're here. Let's go to a local meetup. I promise you, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we went to a meetup and we were at a table where... everyone spoke English, but no one had brought a game.
Yeah.
And I saw in the collection, hey, It's a Wonderful World. Let's play that. I can teach that to everyone. Everyone was like, hey, whoa, this is a fun game. But we also then ended up discussing, this was in Malaga, Spain. So we ended up discussing what is it like to live in Malaga. And we talked about commute and other kind of cool stuff that commute, cool stuff. Yeah, really interesting things. But just like these small details about Spanish everyday working life that me and Chilla had wondered over the days that we had been there. So it was like really fun to have those conversations and talk. How is it to live here and work here? Yeah.
It was not part of the ugly.
No, this is in the good category.
But okay, I think we mentioned all of my uglies. Like, I think I've ranted enough. Mm. Is there something that you wanted still to say?
Yeah, maybe about the uglies. So this, as I said earlier, I don't think this is happening in our meetup. I feel like it's a common complaint, especially from women gamers, that meetups and public gaming groups can be pretty toxic.
Yeah.
You can easily end up in a table where you feel that, hey, this person is talking to me like I'm an idiot.
Mm.
And it might have to do something with my gender.
Mm.
This stuff, I don't see it happening in our meetup.
Yeah. I have had a couple of times issues in the past where it was mostly annoying, like to play with somebody, in, especially cooperative games. This is a game that like, I have played before. Somebody was new, and then the person that had the game was like being annoying, like, oh, why did you do that? I'm like, just let them play. We're just having fun. It's just a meetup. Like, if you want to play a serious game, gather your group of friends and play it in a serious competitive thing. Don't expect to everybody at the table in the meetup, unless you know they know the game, to play well or to not have some analysis paralysis, you know?
Yeah.
I think there's something that you have to give in order to get from the meetup, and you cannot expect everything to go perfect. And if you are not nice about it, then it can feel indeed toxic, even if it's not about gender.
Yeah. I've one time at the meetup, there was some other group, it was like a work group, I think, that seemed that someone who at the office was really excited about board games had kind of like lured everyone in. And I was listening to that group, which was impossible not to listen because that guy who was organizing it was like really loud, super annoying. And I was just thinking to myself that, wow, these people do exist. These kind of like your classic, I don't know what's the term, like...
Alpha gamer? No.
Yeah, something like that. Just shouting at people how they're doing wrong things, you know, cussing off people who are like on their phones and not paying attention. Hey, maybe it has something to do with the fact that you're not such a fun person to play with. And I mean, of course, hey, keep those screens away when you're playing a game. But it's also, you know, you can be nice about suggesting that, hey, let's focus on this shared
thing. Yeah, for sure. I've also experienced situations where I think a person really wanted to play the game and then the group was a bit distracted because they were mostly into the social part. And then the person was obviously frustrated and I can understand that frustration. We were five and I was like three. I was like neutral. I was like, I don't care if these people are talking. I would like them to play faster, but I understand they're having fun and I'm like, hey, let's just have fun together, right? Or let them have fun. And I think it was a bit annoying for that person and that person then ended up being a bit annoying to other people. And I'm like, oh, well, I mean, I think the majority of the vibe is on this side. So maybe you're in the wrong and I can understand it's frustrating to you, but then like just let them be and maybe just say like, hey, let's stop playing at the end instead of suggesting yet another game.
Yeah.
Which was a little bit awkward. When we finished gaming that time, I was like, maybe we should just suggest to break this group apart and then play with some other people. So
or pick a different game. If the vibe is this chatty vibe, then hey, maybe we don't play this Vitalis Erde game here.
Exactly.
One thing more about the ugly, you know, just general bad behavior that can happen in public settings. That's a thing that happens in meetups all around the world.
Yeah.
It's not something I feel that is happening in our meetup.
No, definitely not.
Hey, there was like a couple years ago, like the closest I feel like we have come to that situation, there was like some probably like mentally a bit stressed person came into that meetup and started shouting all kinds of nonsense, but I think the cops came to pick him up. I don't think he was there to play board games.
Okay, he was not part of the meetup.
No. But yeah, I think one key secret or like the one secret or key recipe in our meetup that enables this is the fact that I feel like, for example, the gender distribution in our meetup is pretty close to 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
I don't count the numbers. I haven't like counted them, but it feels pretty close to 50-50. And I feel like in settings where the gender distribution is in those numbers, the bad behavior of, I'm going to say it, men. Like, hey, I'm not going to like sugarcoat this. It's men. Men are usually like, they're like almost always the problem with this type of stuff. The bad behavior just disappears a little bit, at least. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think many of the men, at least that are in our group, in our meetup, are maybe more considerate than the average men in some other meetups. At least I can think of you and other people. We're like, hey, like we've been raised the right way.
Yeah, but this might be this kind of like, I studied it through in a degree where the gender distribution was very lopsided.
Yeah.
A lot of men, very few women in the study program. And I felt that dumped us all down a lot in those like events in that group. When I went to a different student group where the gender distribution was very different, people got so much smarter.
Mm.
Same people.
Well, at least personally, I'm really aware of those things. And I feel like I try to, if somebody's like saying some weird stuff, I'm like try to diffuse it without being too aggressive. Like, ah, man, no.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's all about the social surrounding. What I'm trying to say is that I think it does play a big role.
For sure.
Yeah.
And a lot of maybe older members or bigger members in our group like that have been there for a while and then bring a lot of games are women. So that's also, I think, a big factor there. They're like pillars of the group, I guess.
Yes.
So for sure that I think has an effect into the new people and how they behave.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anything else you would like to say?
No. What rating do you give to meetups?
I think meetups get a 4 out of 4. At the same time that I'm not like particularly inclined to join meetups anymore, I think that is one thing that is like, they're optional. You can decide to join or not to join. If you're tired of them, don't go. But the fact that they exist and all of the benefits to me vastly outweigh the negatives. If I knew that the majority of meetups in the world, they were super toxic, then I would be like, okay, in general, meetups suck. But then that's maybe the quality of the people organizing that meetup rather than the concept of a board game meetup itself. So I would give it a 4 out of 4 stars because I think they're amazing. That is how I met you. That is how I've met a lot of nice people in Finland. That is how I have gotten into like this board game habit of every Thursday playing board games. It's my board game day. Now we have done it also on Sunday. So even though there are negatives, I still really like the concept. And I think anybody that is new to the hobby should try them, should go there, should try to find a group that meets their like standards of gaming and then keep with them and try to maybe keep either in the meetup if that works for you or then try to play with them outside of the meetup afterwards.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. 4 out of 4 stars from me as well. And I don't think there's anything for me to add on top of that. Yeah. You hit the right points there.
All right. So we want to thank you for your time. Our next episode is airing in 2 weeks. In the meantime, you can visit boardgameok.com for more information about the show.
Vappumoi!